Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded changemakers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, I shared stories on the topic of asking why, in order to get to the bottom of things, to find solutions, to enable self-discovery, specifically with regard to identifying core values that point to your life meaning and purpose. I concluded the episode by inviting you to eavesdrop on this, the opening, time-warped, fact-based conversation between Annie Younger at age 25 in the year 1980 and Annie Older, 35 or more years later. The conversation over the next few episodes is all about getting to the bottom of things, using the power of inquiry. Let's listen in. Why speak with you, Annie, of my future? What are we going to talk about? Where is it going to take me? By the way, may I call you Annie O, you know, for Annie Older? Sure, that works. The O makes me think, oh, a constant state of exclamation and a great place to be in. May I call you Annie Y? It fits two ways. Annie Younger, and Annie the Inquirer, asking why. I like it. Good, that's settled. We're going to dive into talking about that enigmatic Zen saying concerning enlightenment, which I know you're struggling with because I remember being there. The saying is, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Oh, yes, Annie, oh, that one is confusing. I can't make sense of it. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Makes it seem enlightenment is a useless pursuit. How are we going to understand it? Well, actually, by going into your life experiences, past, present, and future, rather like Ebenezer Scrooge following the three ghosts. I know that 1951 movie, A Christmas Carol, starring Alistair Sim, strongly resonates with you because you're an aha person. An aha person? A person who shares for aha moments everywhere. Aha moments are sparks of enlightenment. You know how Scrooge has his brilliant aha on Christmas morning when he becomes enlightened, dances around giddily and proclaims, I'm as light as a feather, I'm as happy as an angel. You cried along with Dad watching that scene. I'll never forget that special moment. Yeah, that wasn't long before Dad died. Maybe 5 years ago when I was around 20. I still feel that shared moment poignantly. So glad you haven't forgotten it, Annie O. I won't. It's part of who I've become, who you're becoming. And you know how you love The Wizard of Oz? That's an aha story, too. The aha comes when the characters see behind the curtain and realize there is no great wizard to give them what they're seeking, that what they want is already within them. And another one is that's one of your favorite movies ever is The Miracle Worker. Yes, the story of Helen Keller, the deaf, mute, and blind girl. I love it. It has a really powerful aha, as you call it. I was only 7 when that came out in 1962, so I think it must have been a few years later when I saw it for it to have made such an indelible impression on me. Do you still recall the water pump scene, Annie O, when you can see understanding suddenly coming to Helen's deaf, mute, and blind mind? When she grasps it, that the letters W-A-T-E-R being signed over and over again onto the palm of her hand by her teacher actually form the word representation for what is flowing over her other hand out of the pump. That moment changed her life forever because she could now communicate with others. I definitely remember it, Annie Y. I just watched it again not too long ago, and the emotional intensity of it still makes me cry. To my mind, that's as apt of a depiction of enlightenment as I've ever come across. The dark, silent, lonely world Helen had miserably existed in up to that point in her young life was suddenly infused with the joy of discovery, connectivity, and potentiality. And indeed, she went on to become a famous author, lecturer, and political activist. Okay, I understand now about aha moments igniting enlightenment. enlightenment, which I take to mean the increasing of awareness and understanding, seems to come in a brilliant flash. Did that flash happen to you, or should I say, does it happen to me? Annie Y., I would add to your definition of enlightenment by saying that in addition to enlightenment being increasing awareness and understanding, it's also an unburdening. Think of it as both lightening up the darkness and lightening up the load. And no, even though it appears to, enlightenment doesn't often happen in a flash, any more than becoming an Olympic contender happens instantly. An aha moment is a sudden brilliant spark in the darkness. Enlightenment is the accumulation of those sparks. If we equate enlightenment to a gold medal win at the Olympics, which might appear to happen in the few seconds of a race, then aha moments equate to the months and months and years of development from which the win really comes. Scrooge had to journey with three ghosts, i.e. collect many aha moments in order to wake up a changed man, or shall I say, become enlightened on Christmas morning. Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Lion, and the Scarecrow had to travel along the yellow brick road to get to Oz to find out that the wizard, aka wise being, is within. Helen Keller had to experience the persistent, diligent efforts of her teacher signing into the palm of her hand over and over again for many months before the meaning of the signing came to her in a moment of insight at the water pump, a huge aha moment. So if I'm understanding you, Annie O., enlightenment grows on you like a day dawning. Nice metaphor. Like a day perpetually dawning. Huh? Are you saying you can never be fully enlightened? That's what I believe. Consider this analogy. You're going to find you'll be doing a lot of wilderness hiking and camping over the coming years with your kids as they grow up, and even later on when they're adults. And kids, how many am I going to have? Hang on, Annie, why? That'll come. Anyway, as I was saying, you're going to be doing a fair bit of camping across Canada, and with that, lots of hiking. Hiking up hills and mountains, you'll find that the higher you hike, the greater the vistas from the increasingly higher outlooks. The wows grow even more frequent. As your elevation increases, the farther and wider you can see. In theory, you could keep climbing higher forever, beyond the top of the mountain, beyond the moon, beyond the galaxy, so that the farther up you go, the more expansive your field of view becomes. And you'll also find out soon enough that the less stuff you carry with you, the easier the hike and the more distance you can travel. In fact, to accomplish the steepest climbs, you really have to get rid of every extraneous thing or you won't make it very far. Again, in theory, if you could make yourself light enough, you could ride on a breeze. That's how I think of enlightenment. The ridding of inessentials from your backpack, the climbing upward along the mountain trail, and the gathering of aha sparks that lighten your way. So, Annie O., you're telling me that enlightenment is a continuous, unending growth of awareness as well as an unburdening? Succinctly said, that's how I see it. Takes forever to achieve. Okay, going back to the Zen saying that befuddled me in the first place, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, after enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Why bother making the effort of hiking up steep inclines, searching for aha sparks, if you can't spot any differences between the before enlightenment and after enlightenment pictures? This seems contradictory to the movie examples we talked about earlier. In those cases, the before and after is really obvious. I must be missing something here. I gather you have spent the next 35 years of my life searching and climbing. Why? Where has it gotten you? Or I guess I should ask, where will it get me? Good question, Annie. Why? Why bother pursuing enlightenment if it seemingly takes so much effort and anyway you don't see any changes from before enlightenment to after enlightenment? I remember not understanding that Zen saying when I was you, and I also remember years later coming to understand it and feeling high on joy in the realization. It was like coming out of a dense, dark forest onto a lookout on a mountain trail and realizing how far up I had climbed. Let's restate the Zen saying to modernize it. Before enlightenment, go to work, come home, and make dinner. After enlightenment, go to work, come home, and make dinner. Doesn't exactly make it any more compelling or understandable, Annie O. Patience, Annie Y. In an attempt to help you make sense of the saying, I have to tell you things that need to be preceded by a spoiler alert. So now, be forewarned, you'll become aware of significant future life circumstances. Okay with that? Well, this conversation through time is already rather whacked, so I guess. Let's begin. Where you are now in 1980, you've been married for 3 years. You're already having doubts about the future of your marriage. Yeah, but I haven't admitted that to anyone yet. And you'll secretly harbor those doubts for some time yet. Well, kid, it gets tougher, a lot tougher, for a number of years. But don't despair. What lies beyond is worth the trip through the tough. In fact, what lies beyond couldn't happen without the trip through the tough. In a couple of years, your life will change forever, wonderfully, with the arrival of your first daughter. By 1989, you'll have three healthy, beautiful daughters, and will have lost a son in your 7th month of pregnancy. A couple of years after that, you'll have an amazing baby boy. Remember, you always wanted a big family, and you're going to find out how incomparably rewarding it feels to love your children and be loved back, and how uber challenging. Throughout your family growth, you'll be working full-time in a professional office job, anxiously trying to fend off bankruptcy while wishing you were at home with your kids. You'll be feeling guilty and ashamed because you don't have enough time with your children, and your home isn't as nice or clean as your friends. You'll be struggling at once to salvage and to escape from a marriage you find emotionally and mentally exhausting. 26 years into it, you'll call it quits. Sell the home you built and raised your family in and feel both relieved and guilty about the separation. At different times, you'll be a codependent in relationships involving addictions and mental illness. Believe me, I can't do justice in describing the parent-child love that will grow in your life and continues to grow. And I can't apologize for the trials and tribulations or say I wish they didn't happen or that they're not going to happen to you. I love who I am now, and I wouldn't be who I am today if I didn't go through exactly those life experiences. Wow. I hope you understand if I don't know what to say right now. I'm trying to grasp everything you've just shared. You've rather burst my bubble. I know, Annie Y, and I do understand, but trust me, you'll be hearing some amazing stuff that I sure wish I knew when I was you. I shared your future history to expand on before enlightenment, go to work, come home, and make dinner. I think this part of the saying is easy enough to grasp. Day-to-day life can seem like all effort and no reward. I have to clarify, though, that it's not entirely correct to say that all the stuff I just shared with you happened before enlightenment. I may have started my adult life in the before enlightenment place, pretty well where you are now, but once I set foot on the path to enlightenment, as the years rolled by, aha moments began sparking with increasing frequency. In fact, it's been the greatest struggles that the most powerful aha sparks glowed brightest. I'll talk more about that later. It's a continuum, as I said. I don't believe you can ever attain total enlightenment. The before and after in the saying, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, after enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, as I understand it, refers to before and after setting foot on the path to enlightenment. Enlightenment is a becoming, a lifelong process. As you advance along the continuum, gathering up the aha moments, climbing higher along the trail, you ever so gradually start to notice the view is getting more magnificent, that your load is becoming lighter as you shed unnecessary baggage. That's a metaphorical way to say that I am, to this day, still working to earn a living, still paying off long ago accrued debts, still maintaining a home and property. I am still accompanying my adult children through their challenges, still working at constructing healthy boundaries and learning what appropriate support is to a loved one seeking recovery, and still interacting with my estranged husband. But the amazing thing is, I now go about my day-to-day business with almost non-existent anxiety, shame, guilt, worry, or mental or emotional conflict. As these undesirable feelings become increasingly diminished, they are being replaced with growing feelings of peace, contentment, fulfillment, and empowerment. I am very happy. Okay now, Annie O, I see where you're going with this. An outsider looking in on your life might not, at first, see too much difference if any, between your day-to-day life in your earlier, before enlightenment years, and your day-to-day life where you are now, after enlightenment, so to speak. But you, looking from the inside out, you see a difference, or should I say, you feel greatly different while still going about your normal business. Those negative emotions or feelings we don't want in our lives are being replaced with positives in your life. It's not that you're not going to continue to experience trials and tribulations, to use your term from earlier, but that you're now able to not let them bring you down to an undesirable mental or emotional place nearly as much, right? You got it anyway. And the best part is that as you advance along the path to enlightenment, you grow increasingly empowered to become the change you want to see in the world. You become confident, energized, and impassioned, and gain clarity and direction on your life purpose. You become a positive influence on others, and they feel comfortable in your presence and inspired by your authenticity. Yes, I understand it. The Zen saying, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Maybe no difference in day-to-day life is discernible from the outside, but a huge difference is felt on the inside. Now, what I really want to know is, how do you go about becoming enlightened, getting on the path, as you say? So you ask, Annie, why, how do you become enlightened? In response, I ask, how do you become older? It happens, but how you let it happen is what makes the difference. No living thing is exempt from aging, except maybe turtles and tortoises, I've learned. But so many humans try to fight it, slow it down, or deny it, instead of flowing in harmony with it. They don't or won't see the beauty in it, associating aging instead only with the inherent physical and mental degeneration. But let's talk about aging beautifully another day. Back to enlightenment. I see it as the same as aging. It happens to everyone, but so many people hinder or disallow its emergence in their life so that it never manifests and they fail to reap the rewards of it. They don't or won't see their truths, the aha moments, that they stumble over in the dark and instead curse the obstacles in their path and keep on bumbling along in the dark. Are you saying then, Annie O, that absolutely everyone has the opportunity for enlightenment? The opportunity, yes, Annie Y. The desire or instinct to act on the opportunity? Maybe not so much. For about a year in your not too distant future, you're going to work in a nursing home. It'll be a life-changing experience. You'll come to see that it seems like there are two different kinds of residents there, simplistically speaking. For the most part, they're elderly, infirm people, but some are crotchety complainers, full of regret and blame, spreading misery, while others are contented folks who happily enjoy the moment and spread cheer. I thought of the residents as living on either the light or dark side of the nursing home. Why is it like that, do you think, Annie? Why? Well, I guess probably because some of the folks led an enlightened life and others, like me a little while ago, just didn't know what it's all about and that you can choose to be happy. And by the way, I'd like to hear more about that choosing. I don't think it can be as easy as you make it sound. Anyway, I would think everyone would want a calm, fulfilling, happy life if they knew it's there for them, no matter the challenges they face. So the next question is, how do you get the desire or the motivation to start climbing and collecting the aha sparks, as you call them, along the path to enlightenment? A key question, Annie Y. And keeping with the mountain trail metaphor, I'll restate your question like this. What is it that is going to compel you to reach down and flip over that stumbling stone you stubbed your toe on to find glowing aha sparks beneath it and use it as a stepping stone, instead of you just cursing the obstacle and carrying on your stumbling way through the dark forest? I suggest that the motivation is often birthed in one toe stub or one stumble too many, falling flat on your face in the dirt yet again, or tumbling off the cliff and hitting the unforgiving rock bottom. Initially, it appears rather nasty that it takes a few or many such drastic and painful happenings to foster motivation, but as you'll come to see, those apparent mishaps are, in reality, the opportunities for enlightenment. They're given to everyone over and over again all through life in very subtle or extreme life-altering ways. And we either ignore them, bemoan and curse them, or give thanks for them and convert them to our use. Well, it's probably quite a stretch initially for people to be grateful for shit happening, to say it rather bluntly. Anyway, that's going to be a favorite saying of someone who will become your brother-in-law in a couple of years. Anyway, yes, you're correct. It does take quite a bit of practice to get into the habit of seeing the manure as fertilizer for your growth, so to speak. I tend to think, with only limited knowledge of scientific studies behind my thinking, that some people might just be born with DNA that lends to a stronger inclination to flip over the stumbling stones, to see shit as fertilizer. And definitely, as children, we pick up on and adopt behavior that's modeled for us. So if the adult role models in our childhood are stone flippers, then it's more likely that we will imitate that behavior. Regardless of that nature-nurture stuff, I believe pretty well everyone has the ability to develop the habit of flipping over the rocks to find the aha sparks underneath and creating stepping stones along their path toward enlightenment. The habit might come more easily and skillfully to someone who benefits from a head start due to favorable nature and nurturing, just like it's easier to become an Olympic sprinter if you're born with a runner's physique and you have been encouraged and supported to develop your skill. But with practice, we can all become faster runners, and we can all develop, to some degree or another, the habit of flipping over those stumbling blocks. That makes sense, Annie O. Definitely tougher for some, easier for others. I guess we can all move at our own pace and in our own way along the path of enlightenment once we set foot on it. No matter how fast we move along or how far we get, any movement must feel better than staying stuck in the muck. So tell me, sounds like from our conversation earlier on that I'm going to get bogged down in some serious sucking muck over the next couple of decades and will need some pretty significant stepping stones. Where do I find the motivation to get myself out? Annie Y, that's an excellent question to end today's conversation. We're actually sharing this conversation via a radio program recorded when you're at the age of 68, so we have a time limitation. A radio program? That's so cool! My goodness, a lot of change must happen to me over the years because I can't imagine myself doing that, having the confidence and comfort. I can't wait to carry on our chat and find out how I get to where the future me is at. What year are you doing the recording, by the way? It's 2024. Oh my God, that sounds so futuristic. Have things changed much, I mean, in the world since 1980? Anyway, I don't know where to begin. For one thing, we're presently facing what I and a lot of other people think of as an existential crisis due to humanity's abuse of our environment. It's not pretty. There's a lot of extreme weather events happening because of human exacerbated climate change. Our planet is warming up at an alarming rate. This, combined with becoming a grandparent, has motivated me to do this radio program as well as be active on social media to heighten awareness of the link between personal and planetary wellness. I want to help enable people to bring their best, most empowered selves into the cause of creating a better world, to help save the world for my grandchild and all her generation, and in the process enable them to create happiness and fulfillment. Whoa, Annie O. I'm excited for sure about a future granddaughter, but this sounds very dystopian. And what the heck is social media? Annie Y, that's another biggie that I can't get into right now. We'll come back to that at a later time. Keep positive. Gotta go. Talk soon. Thanks for listening in on the opening conversation between Annie Younger and Annie Older. I invite you to come back for our continuing chat here on Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week. Same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.